All right, well, let's grab our Bibles. We're going back to the book of Daniel today. Daniel chapter 5. Daniel chapter 5. And you know, in the book of Daniel, there's six stories in a row. Chapter 2 through chapter 7, six stories in a row, and they're intentionally put in the order that they're put in to give a message. And the central two stories out of the six are the two stories that we've been walking through, chapter 4 and chapter 5. Basically, the message in the two center stories are we as people need to not become prideful, and we need to walk humbly with God. In chapter 4, we saw the story of Nebuchadnezzar and how he exhibited pride by raising himself up. One of the ways that we can not be humble, or one of the ways we can express pride, is by lifting ourselves up and saying, look what I've done in my life, and look what I've accomplished, and look what God has done for me. And I feel a sense of ego swelling up, and that I may be better than others. I lift myself up. That's the pride of chapter 4. In chapter 5, Daniel tells the story of Belshazzar, which we started last week. And Belshazzar is the king of Babylon in the ancient world. And he is in this wonderful city that's impenetrable. And he is having a feast. And Belshazzar's pride isn't lifting himself up so much as it is not having reverence for what God classifies as sacred. So every chapter we've been picking a key word, and the key word in chapter 5 is the word reverence. If I want to live a life of greatness, it needs to include a life of reverence. And reverence simply means I respect what God classifies as sacred. I don't puff myself up higher than others. That's chapter 4. I don't see my world as self-centered. That's chapter 4. But in chapter 5, there's a little twist to this idea of walking humbly with God. And it's the idea is that whatever God classifies as sacred, I'm going to have a tremendous amount of respect for. The story in chapter 5 opens up. We saw this last week. Belshazzar is having a big feast for 1,000 of his nobles. He's having this dinner party that often went several days, and he's got literally a couple of thousand people eating and feasting. And somehow or sometime during that feast, as he gets a little drunk, honestly, because it says there in verses 1 and 2 that he's been tasting the wine, he remembers that his grandfather Nebuchadnezzar had went to Jerusalem 45 years earlier and had went into the temple of Jerusalem and took out some of the gold vessels, the cups and the chalice. And when Nebuchadnezzar did that back in chapter 1, he was telling the world that my God is bigger than Israel's God. Because in the ancient world, it was all about whose God is stronger, whose God is bigger. And so when Nebuchadnezzar in chapter 1 went to Jerusalem and he collected all the stuff from the temple treasury in Jerusalem, and he went to Babylon and he put all of those articles in the temple treasury of Marduk, he was telling the world Marduk is more powerful than Jehovah. Well, now, 43, 45 years later, Belshazzar is on the throne in Babylon and he's having this feast and he wants some more vessels, some more cups and chalice. He's running out of drinking hardware. And he remembers that in the palace or in the treasury of Marduk, there are these cups and chalice. And so he brings them out, and it says in verses 3 and 4 that he was giving them to his nobles and to his wives and to his concubines, and they were drinking the wine from these sacred cups. And then in verse 4, it says they were toasting the gods of gold and silver and stone and wood. And as Belshazzar's toasting these gods, something crazy happens. Something crazy happens. And that's where we pick up our story in verse 5. So you can imagine, go back in your mind's eye to the ancient world. You're sitting in this ancient dining hall that seats a couple of thousand people. And over on the side, the lampstands are brighter because that's where the king is sitting with his entourage. And they're toasting the gods of gold and the gods of silver. And as you're watching them, you see the glistening of the silver and gold chalice that came from the temple treasury of Marduk, which were stolen from the temple treasury of Jehovah. And Nebuchadnezzar was smart enough not to mess with that stuff. But Belshazzar doesn't have respect for the things that God calls sacred, and so God steps in. In fact, if you go to verse 23 of this chapter, we'll skip ahead just for a moment, in verse 23 of chapter 5, and it says, you, this is Daniel now talking a little bit later with Belshazzar. He says, number one, you have exalted yourself. There's the pride. But notice the next word in verse 23. You have exalted yourself what? Against the Lord. Uh-oh. It's one thing for Nebuchadnezzar to lift himself up in pride, to say, wow, look at the kingdom that I've built. That's chapter 4 and verse 30. Look at the empire that I have done. It's for my comfort, it's for my strength, and it's for my majesty. It's a completely different kind of pride when you say, you know what, God, I know the right thing to do, but I don't respect you enough to do it. Now, wow, now I've set my life not just high in pride, but Daniel says to Belshazzar, I've set myself against the Lord. Now we're clashing. And the fear or the danger of a lack of reverence is that I'm setting my life in opposition to God. And he says he does it in two ways. Look at verse 23 before we jump back into our story. It says, you've exalted yourself against the Lord of heaven, and they have brought the vessels of the house of his house before you. And you and your nobles and your wives and your concubines have been drinking wine from them. Number one, God declared his ancient temple a sacred place. And by you going into the treasury and taking out the sacred vessels of Jehovah and using them in a very sacrilegious way, you just got God's attention. Because God declared those things sacred. And then he tells them there in verse 23, it says, not only have you been drinking from them, and it says, you have praised the gods of silver and gold, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone, which do not see, hear, or understand. But the God in whose hand are your life, breath, and all your ways, you have not glorified. In other words, the second thing that Belshazzar has not recognized is the sacredness of God himself. So here's two ways that we are told that Belshazzar lacked reverence. Number one, for the person of God, because God is sacred, isn't he? His name is sacred. And number two, there's some stuff that God classifies as sacred. In this instance, it's the vessels from the temple. And so as we've been looking through this, we've been asking ourselves a question. We can go now back to verse 5. We can ask ourselves the question, what does God classify as sacred today? As we live in our culture in this time of history, as we live a normal life, we go to school, we go to work, we live our families, we go on vacations. What does God classify as sacred? Special. Because certainly I think we're here today to learn how to live a life that is not fighting against God. Because what a dangerous life it would be for me today or for you today to actually be setting up a life that is not just lifted up in pride, but exalts myself against God. Don't ever exalt yourself against God. Turn to your neighbor and say, knock it off. You've been doing it. I see it in you. Knock it off. So we need to ask the question, what is sacred to God? Because I don't want to mess with that stuff. I want to have the word reverence for whatever God says is sacred. So we're going to spend the next couple of weeks trying to scour the scriptures to find out what is it that God classifies as sacred. We see two things here. Number one is the person of God. God classifies, and this is strange, himself as sacred. That's why in the Ten Commandments given to Moses in the Old Testament, the first three are about him, right? The first one, you shall have no other what? Gods except for me. Number two, you will not make any graven what? Images and worship them. And number three, you're not to use the Lord's what? Name in vain. Three of them. Because God says, I'm holy. And when I disrespect or have lack of reverence for the person of God, I'm aligning my life in opposition to him. If we sense God is calling in our lives to draw close to him, if we live a life that, in a sense, blasphemes the person of God, we better be careful. Better be careful. What else does he declare as sacred? We're going to look at that over the next couple of weeks. But let's look at our story this morning. We're going to go back to chapter 5, verse 5, and let's look just at the sequence of events this morning, and we're going to just glean some truths from it, but we're going to spend just more time sharing the story today, and we'll get into the different aspects of it more next week. Verse 5, he's holding up these chalices. He is giving toasts to the gods of gold and silver, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone. That's verse 4. And then in verse 5, wow, suddenly the fingers of a man's hand emerged and began writing opposite the lampstand on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the back of the hand that did the writing. This emerging hand of God. The word emerging means to be unappearing and then all of a sudden appearing. It's to be called into view. So they're having this grand party. They're minding their own business. Belshazzar thinks that everything is fine. He's in this impenetrable city. We talked about the city last week. He knows that Cyrus, the commander of the Medo-Persian army, has surrounded the building, but the walls are tall and the walls are thick, and there's 20 years of supplies in the city. The river is running through it. There's watchtowers. He's got the army, and he feels so secure that he's having this feast. And in verse 4, he also makes sure that all the gods that he worships are okay. He's good with them because he gives them all honor. He toasts to the gods of gold and to silver and to bronze and iron. He makes sure he covers all of his bases. So now he sits down on his throne and he says, all is good. The gods will protect me from Cyrus. The city is impenetrable. I've got the army. I am comfortable enough here to feast and to have some wine and to throw a party for 1,000 of my nobles. He's feeling very comfortable, and then all of a sudden, something that wasn't there mysteriously appears, and it says the word suddenly, that very hour. I love how God shows up at the very hour that he just finished praising the gods, and he sits down thinking, life is good. Yes, I have difficult circumstances at the gate, but I'm safe from those. I've appeased the gods. All is good. God shows up right at that moment. And it says, the fingers of a man's hand. So we know that this is a human hand. It's called a man's hand. It's not an ape's hand. It's not the hand of the gods. It's a human hand. And it says there in verse 5, and Belshazzar was looking at this. I went and I pulled up a picture of the most famous Babylonian gods. And there's Marduk, and there's Ishtar, and there's Tiamat. And he's wondering, Belshazzar must have been wondering, whose hand is this? Is it Marduk's hand? Is it Ishtar's hand? Is it Tiamat's hand? And if so, he's never had an encounter with any of his gods like that. Remember back in chapter 2, when Daniel was interpreting King Nebuchadnezzar's dream, the dream of the statue that had the gold head and the silver shoulders and so forth. And when King Nebuchadnezzar called in the wise men and the conjurers and he asked them to tell him the dream and interpret the dream, the conjurers and all the wise men of Babylon said, King, what you're asking us is impossible, because only someone who is in connection with the gods could tell you the dream that you had. And we know that verse tells us in chapter 2 that the gods are not near, they're distant from us. And so Belshazzar never had a personal encounter with a god. And all of a sudden, this divine hand is showing up, and he has no idea who it is or what it says. He's a little bit of a drunken stupor, and now all of a sudden he's a sober king. Encounters with God have a tendency to sober us up, don't they? Maybe not from a drunken stupor like Belshazzar, but sometimes when we're just doing life our own way and we're going the ways that God doesn't want us to go, and all of a sudden God throws an experience in our life or he brings a recognition of his presence in some way, it has a tendency to wake us up a little bit spiritually. And now all of a sudden Belshazzar is wide awake as he sees this hand writing on the wall. It's the fingers of a man. And it emerged. That means released to appear. It shows up unexpectedly. And you'll notice it says there in verse 5 that it was the opposite the lampstand. Archaeologists have discovered this palace, and on one wall, it's 167 feet wide and about 50 feet deep. And right in the middle of this wall, there's a notch that is pushed back a little bit further, and they think that is where the king sat in this special little enclave. And they would have had special lampstands right by the king's seat because they wanted that to be the brightest part of the dining hall. And then right opposite of that is this plaster wall where the words begin to appear. This is the brightest part of the dining hall so that everyone in the room could read what was happening or could see what was happening. The plaster of the wall, the smooth surface. And then again, it says there in verse 5 that the king saw the back of the hand that did the writing. So he's kind of looking over the shoulder, so to speak. He could see he couldn't see the front of the hand, so he wasn't standing beside it. He saw the back of the hand so he could see as it was drawing on the wall. I don't know about you, but that would be a scary moment, wouldn't it? Have you ever had an encounter with a supernatural? Have you ever been in the presence of something that you knew this is not a human encounter here? Whether it's good or bad, many people have had an encounter with the dark side of spirituality. You've had an encounter with a demon, or you've had an encounter with a dark force, and you can just feel it, can't you? The hair on the back of your neck stands up, and there's an awareness that in this space, there's a darkness here, and it's tangible and it's real. That's an encounter with spiritual darkness. And many times we've had a encounter with the spiritual God. The Holy Spirit comes in, and we're spending this moment or we're in this experience, and all of a sudden we feel so close to God as if we could reach out and touch him. And we know that this is not a daily experience, but there's something supernatural happening in my presence here, and we have an encounter with God. And that's what Belshazzar was feeling. The problem is he wasn't understanding what was going on. Now, my favorite verse in this whole chapter is verse 6. Belshazzar's response to the hand. Look at verse 6. Then the king's face grew pale, and his thoughts alarmed him. So it starts with his head and it works its way down. His face grew pale. All the blood rushed out. His thoughts alarmed him. His hip joints went slack and his knees began knocking together. He was so petrified that literally his knees began to knock better. I remember the first wedding that I ever did. It was my good friends Dave and Ann Banta, and they asked me to do their wedding. And I remember walking up the front aisle and standing there as the bridal party was coming. This is the first wedding I'd ever done. And I literally looked down at my slacks and they were shaking like that. And I said, "Welcome to Ave and Dan's wedding." And it was Dave and Ann. I just couldn't even pronounce it. He's so petrified. His face gets flushed. His thoughts are just spiraling out of control. He has to sit down, and his knees are shaken together. Now, for that to happen to this guy is pretty impressive, because this is the guy who has Cyrus at the gates. Cyrus's army has swept through his land and has sieged his city. And history tells us that he sieged it for almost 2 years. And so for 2 years, Belshazzar could handle the pressure of the armies at the gate. Didn't really bother him. He could handle the pressures of managing this huge Babylonian city. He could handle the pressures of managing 1,000 nobles. But when God shows up, his face goes pale, his thoughts alarm him, his hip goes slack, and his knees begin to knock together. He is scared to death, but he still doesn't know who it is. Now that can tell us a couple of things. Number one, it tells us the distant relationship he had with his gods, because if it was Marduk or Ishtar, they never came close to appearing to him like this before. This was a new experience. Or he's beginning to encounter a new god. And remember, he had just given a toast to all the gods. So now all of a sudden for a deity, a divine appearance to happen, he must have been thinking, oh no, who did I miss in my toast? He had no idea. See, he thought that because he was in an impenetrable city and because he had an army at his disposal and because he had 20 years of provisions in the storage bins, in the barns, and because he was the king, he thought that his life was secure from being disrespectful to God. And it's a great lesson for me to learn and for us to learn in our day and age. We can think that our life is not lived out in front of the God of the universe. And we can think, you know what, I have this life, this part of life all settled, and I'm super strong over here, and I'm doing fine over here, and I've appeased the gods, so God should just leave me alone. I've done my religious stuff. I've prayed that prayer when I was in danger. I went to church sometimes. I went to youth group. I'm not bashing God. So God, just leave me alone. Just let me run my life, because I've done, I think, enough to appease you. And all of a sudden God says, why are you setting your life up against me? His response. So he has a physical response. He has to learn the answer to the question, what's my biggest problem in life? What's the most important issue of my lifetime? Belshazzar was trying to decide, what's the biggest issue in my life? Is it the king at the gate or the commander at the gate? Is it appeasing the gods? Is it managing the nobles? What's the biggest issue in my life? And he didn't realize the biggest issue in his life was, how is he doing with the God of heaven? The biggest question that we have in our lives today, folks, is not how am I doing at work. It's not how's my family, or how's my parents, or how's my bank account, or how's my team. The biggest question in life is, how are we doing with the God of heaven? That's the most important question. Everything else falls into place if I can answer the question, how are you and God doing today? Because Belshazzar took care of all of the other things in his world except, how is he doing with Daniel's God today? So he has a physical response. In verse 7 and 8, he has a diplomatic response. It says, the king called aloud. I love it. He called aloud. He didn't whisper this. He shouted to bring in the conjurers, the Chaldeans, and the diviners. The king spoke and said to the wise men of Babylon, any man who can read this inscription and explain its interpretation to me shall be clothed with purple and have a necklace of gold around his neck and have authority as third ruler in the kingdom. I'm going to give you the fanciest clothes. I'm going to give you the nicest jewelry. I remember we talked last week about Nabonidus was the king of the empire. Belshazzar was the co-regent or the co-king, so he was second in command. And he gives the third position away to anybody that can interpret this handwriting on the wall. His diplomatic response. Verse 8, then all the king's wise men came in, and they could not read the inscription or make known its interpretation to the king. He doesn't get an answer politically. Man, we can learn so many lessons for our culture today through this verse. The answer to the problems in our culture today are not political answers. The answers to our culture today are seeking the person of Jesus Christ. That's the answer to our culture. Seeking the God of heaven. That's the beginning of the healing. So in verse 9, we find that Belshazzar is at his wit's end. He has a conundrum here. The king Belshazzar grew greatly alarmed. I don't know how you do it, but his face grew even paler. Turn to your neighbor and say, well, now he looks like you. Now he looks like you, paler in the face. And his nobles were perplexed. Man, there's so many lessons here. When you and I are going through a difficulty and we don't know the answer, when we don't know the answer to a situation that we're facing, here's the answer. Seek the God of heaven. We sang a song this morning about when I don't know what to do, I press into you. Sometimes we look everywhere for the answers to our issues except pressing into the person of God. There's no reason why a follower of Jesus Christ should have a pale face, an alarmed heart, and a perplexed mind. And it's not that God is going to always give us all the answers immediately, but when we come and press ourselves into the God of heaven, he reduces the alarmedness of our mind. He takes away the fear of our heart. And he allows us to enjoy his presence, which takes away some of the perplexity of our situation. Maybe I struggle with issues that I face because I, like King Belshazzar, have forgotten to press into the God of heaven. And I think sometimes we as followers of Jesus Christ spend too much time with a pale face and an alarmed heart and a perplexed mind simply because we're asking God for answers to our issues instead of just pressing into the person of God. God shows up. But it says at the end of verse 9 that he's perplexed. His leaders are perplexed. So in verse 10, we're introduced to another person in this story. It's the queen. Now, all guys know, if you don't know what the answer to life is, ask your wife. She's going to give you the solutions. Ask your mother. Now, we know that the queen probably was not Belshazzar's wife. In the ancient history, the setup of the kingdom, most likely this woman was the queen mother. It may have been a widow from Nebuchadnezzar who is still living around the palace. It could have been Belshazzar's mother, the queen mother, and she walks in, and you'll notice she's not participating in this event. She's not in the dining hall enjoying the feast. She's separated herself from it, and now she hears all the scuttlebutt, and so she comes into the room, and she offers a solution. Verse 10, we see her calming salutation. It says in verse 10, the queen entered the banquet hall because of the words of the king and his nobles. The queen spoke and said, O king, live forever. Do not let your thoughts alarm you or your face be pale. And then she reminds him of this guy. Because most likely this is the widow of King Nebuchadnezzar. And remember, Daniel was very influential. In fact, he was the head of the wise men of Babylon under Nebuchadnezzar. And so Nebuchadnezzar's wife would have known Daniel. And so she comes into Belshazzar's palace, into his banquet hall, and she says these words in verse 11 and 12. There is a man in your kingdom in whom is a spirit of the holy gods. If you go back to chapter 3, this is exactly in chapter 4, the words that Nebuchadnezzar used when he described Daniel. And in the days of your father, illumination, insight, and wisdom like the wisdom of the gods were found in him. And King Nebuchadnezzar, your father, the king, appointed him chief of the magicians, conjurers, Chaldeans, and diviners. This was because an extraordinary spirit, knowledge, and wisdom, interpretation of dreams, explanation of enigmas, and solving of difficult problems were found in this Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar. Let Daniel now be summoned, and he will declare its interpretation. She brings to Belshazzar's remembrance this guy named Daniel. It's also interesting that Daniel was not in this dining hall. And it's interesting that when King Belshazzar saw the handwriting on the wall and he called all the wise men and the conjurers to himself, Daniel wasn't part of the group. Now, we don't know why. Daniel's in his early 80s at this point. Maybe it's because he's retired, because we know that Nebuchadnezzar had made him the chief, the leader of all the wise men of Babylon. But when the wise men are called, Daniel doesn't come because he's not part of this group. And whether Belshazzar picked someone else or whether he just didn't come because he was retired, we're not sure why he doesn't show up with the group. So she gives him, and she reminds him of this. So in verse 13, we'll wrap it up with this today, and we'll pick up the story next time. Verse 13, then Daniel was brought in before the king. And the king spoke and said to Daniel, are you that Daniel who was one of the exiles from Judah, whom my father the king brought from Judah? Now I've heard about you that a spirit of the gods is in you and that illumination, insight, and extraordinary wisdom has been found in you. Just now the wise men and the conjurers were brought in before me that they might read this inscription and make its interpretation known to me, but they could not declare the interpretation of the message. Daniel, can you do it? And then finally in verse 16, as this is where we'll end today, the king makes a pact with Daniel. I personally have heard about you. Now we know that Belshazzar, again, was the son or the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. And Belshazzar was made known through King Nebuchadnezzar. He says, I personally have heard about you, that you are able to give interpretations and solve difficult problems. Now, if you are able to read the inscription and make its interpretation known to me, you will be clothed with purple and wear a necklace of gold around your neck, and you will have authority as the third ruler of the kingdom. And next week we'll find out Daniel's response. Living a life of reverence, people. We need to make sure we understand, what does God classify as sacred? And then let's respect that. Let's honor that. We know from the story that the person of God is sacred. So we want to be careful in how we speak about him and how we speak to him and how we use his name. And as we have his name written across our chest as Christians, Christ followers, little Christs, we need to make sure that how we live reflects that. When we wear that cross, when we carry that Bible, when we tell our friends that we're Christ followers, we carry that name. And how we revere that name is very important to the person whose name it is. So these are some things. And then second of all, what else does he classify as sacred? And let's learn how to live in reverence of those things and humble our hearts so that we don't exalt ourselves against the God of heaven. It's a great story, great story. Let's stand together and pray. Our gracious God, we thank you for who you are. We revere you today. We lift you up. We respect you. We humble ourselves before you. For you are the God of gods, the only true God, the creator of heaven and earth. You are the giver of life. As Daniel described you to Belshazzar, our very life breath is in your hands. We acknowledge your sovereignty. We acknowledge your kingship. We acknowledge your goodness and grace. Lord, help us to revere you, first of all, and to respect all that you declare to be sacred, so that we can walk a life alongside you and not against you. Show us how to do this, Lord, in Jesus' name. Amen. Let's sing together.